Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station, 1043 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
W begins in just a few hours. Can the Avalanche put the Blues in an 0-2 hole? Not that that would end the series, because we know the history all too well. It was just roughly 365 days ago. We were sitting right here saying, hey, the Avs are up 2-0 on the Knights. That means the Knights have to beat the Avs 5 of the next 6 games. Or excuse me, four of the next five.
It felt like 5 out of 6.
Yes. It was like, wait, no, they got to beat the Avs 4 of the next 5? No. This one's a wrap. So I don't want to get carried away with what tonight can mean, but I also don't want to de-emphasize what it can mean either.
No, I'm with you. Once they get a third win in the series, okay, now I'll feel better. Until then, I won't. If they lose tonight, I'm going to feel a little bit nervous. I don't know that I'd say panic, but I'll be nervous. Because St. Louis is not an easy place to go get a win.
No.
It's not. That's a rabid crowd. The Avs historically have not played well there.
Speaking of the crowd, dude, there's a lot of Blues fans there on Tuesday.
Yeah, but less than you see it, like, a Nuggets playoff game. Oh, it was less than a Suns.
Totally. But I'm saying being at the first round with Nashville.
Sure.
Has a good, I know D-Mac kind of was a wet blanket on their fan base, but Nashville has a good little fan base there. I mean, solid. They've been...
They're front runners. They haven't been through the pain. St. Louis fans have been through the pain.
And sure.
They've stuck with the team through a lot of lean years. Like, those are diehards.
Here's what I'll say, though. For every one Nashville jersey that I saw in the first two games, there was 3 Blues jerseys this time around.
When they scored,
you could hear it. They got their own little, when they do the national anthem, it's the land of the, and they all go, Blues. Like, you could.
Gotcha.
It penetrated.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, they have a good fan base. Going to St. Louis, and especially if you give them hope, and it's 1-1, if they steal a game in Colorado, that place is going to be raucous for game 3 on Saturday. So, yeah, I mean, it looks good now, but, hey, it looked good after 6 games. It looked good after 6 2/3 games last year.
It did.
I remember, and I've said this a bunch, looking at Twitter during the game and having national NHL guys saying, the Avs may not lose a game en route to winning a cup. Now, they were being, you know, hyperbolic, but basically they were just saying that's how well they're playing. That game turned, they never won a game, and it was arguably the worst week in the history of Colorado sports.
It really was.
The Nuggets lost 4 straight, the Avs lost 4 straight. It was every other night for 8 consecutive days.
And the Rockies were under 500.
Yeah, that's a given. but it was the only other week that is equivalent was the week the Rockies got swept by the Red Sox in the World Series. And then Monday Night Football at home against the Packers, and Brett Favre throws an 80-yard touchdown on the first play of overtime to beat the Broncos. And that was another week that was like, that's a gut punch. Those are the two.
We want to thank our listeners in Aurora for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. Aurora, stand up. Okay, what's your vibe? And by the way, I'm with you. Like, if the Avs lost tonight, it's because of the, first of all, just the natural importance of trying to win a Stanley Cup and losing a game, there's already going to be just the, because we're so invested. But considering the history, I'm like you. I'll be freaking nervous as hell.
Yeah, I'll be worried if they lose tonight. I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to get the score tonight that they should have had the other night. I think tonight is 6-2, 6-1, something like that. I think it's a rout. I think Darcy Kuemper was sneaky good the other night. And I know he gave up what some people thought was a soft goal to tie it. It was a bad line change in front of him. It was point-blank range. I thought there were a couple moments and stretches at the end of the second period, at the beginning of the third, where St. Louis kind of almost had some momentum. They had the puck for an extended period of time, and, you know, for the first time in the postseason, the ice tilted the other way for a short period of time, and Darcy Kuemper came up big in both those moments. So I thought he was sneaky good. He's not going to get much attention because he had 20-something saves, and the other guy had 50.
Right.
So I understand that, but I thought he was better in that game than Grubauer was last year in round two, for sure.
Okay.
So I think he'll be good tonight. I think the Avs will come out. I mean, not only did they have the 54 shots, but I think the Blues had 27 blocked shots, too. So that's 81 or 71, quick math. 81. 81. I had it right the first time. 81 right out of the, you know, it's like, man, they were just peppering it. At some point.
I will say this, though, James, of the 54 shots, if you, they're like the next layer of like stats, like the quality scoring chances, the 54 is a massive number and it deserves to get mentioned. It's part of the story, but like a lot of the shots just were not quality scoring chances. Like, let's just get it on net.
For sure.
You know,
that's what it was.
A lot of them were high, wide. And I'm not saying, because a lot of times those can create rebound opportunities, just getting it on there. There's value in that, just getting a shot on goal. But I would like to see just a little bit more quality scoring chances tonight.
I'm with you. I thought it was a lot like a pitcher throwing a 98-mile-an-hour fastball to a major league hitter with no movement. They're going to hit that out of the park, right? And that's a lot of what they were doing with Bennington of like, yeah, we threw a lot of shots your way, but you know, you're a good goaltender. You've won a Stanley Cup, and when you can see them all,
right? If you can see it,
you're gonna make most of those saves, and that's how most of them were. Part of that, though, was based on the way St. Louis was playing. We talked about it earlier. It's kind of, hey, we're going to sit back. We're going to play defensively. There weren't a lot of opportunities to make that extra pass. It was sort of like, all right, well, let's just fire it up there and try and get a rebound and try and get one that way, which they did. Nichushkin's came that way. So I think it's going to be a rout tonight. I do. And I think you're going to know in the first 10 minutes. I think if they come out, they get a goal or two early, the rout is going to be on. Third period, we're going to hear Blink 182.
Which, by the way, I didn't hear Blink 182 play.
Well,
am I bugging or no?
No, I verified it with some sources. They played it after the game. So here's the rule.
Wait a second.
Here's the rule that I was told. They play it in the third period of a rout. So when they have a two-goal lead or more in the third period, they play it. And if it's a tight game, they wait until after they win. That's the story I was told. So they did play it.
That sounds like someone's covering their tracks. Like,
well,
it was a big moment that for just a lot's going on. You forgot to play it.
But basically, it's their victory song, and then they play their victory song in the third period, which is kind of a baller move.
Okay.
I mean, it's
okay.
Like, okay.
Okay.
That's kind of next level. So that's the way it was explained to me, because you're not the only person that said they didn't play it. Rachel was there as well, and she's like, I didn't hear it.
Right.
But I checked with some highly placed sources.
Oh.
Yeah. And they confirmed that the song was played.
All right.
It'll be played tonight in the third period.
I hope you're right, because I did my little super stroll before the game and gave out, you know, Avs on the puck line minus a goal and a half. Didn't hit. I'm going back to the same well tonight. I'm not letting the dynamic of game one dissuade me. I am laying a goal and a half, and hopefully the Avs can take care of business. To help discuss it further, we got Will Peterson, DenverFan.com. Welcome in, Will.
Appreciate it, guys.
What's your vibe?
You know, I hate to just join the group here. I've been listening the last 10 minutes or so. But, guys, this is going to be a rout tonight. You know what they did in Game 3 to Nashville after Connor Ingram had the game of his life in Game 2? They hung a 7 spot on him. Hockey tacos.
Tacos.
Right? So I know Binnington's a lot better than Ingram. Before the text line starts explaining that to me, I get it. But goalies can only stand barrages for so long. Right? There's only so many things a guy can do before he becomes not only physically exhausted, but mentally exhausted. That's what they did to Ingram. You remember was it Taze who got like the 6th goal in game 3 that was just a softy, right? It was a slap shot from the point. It just went right through him. And it was like, that's a goalie who gave everything he had and they finally solved. Listen, guys, Binnington had to stand on his head against Minnesota to even get St. Louis to this point. There's no way if you put another 50 spot on him tonight, you're not scoring 5, 6, 7 goals.
Yeah, game 3 in Nashville was the game where the Avs scored in seemingly every way possible, right? They had 4 power play goals. They had the goal when Ingram misplayed it behind the net.
Correct.
Kadri set a wide open net.
Yep.
I think Taves was shorthanded, and then I think it was McKinnon got the empty netter.
You are right on every account there.
So I'm with you. I think it'll be that kind of a game. The other thing is, at some point, St. Louis, and they've got a potent attack, right? They had 7 guys with 20 goals. At some point, they are going to have to be on the attack. If you think back the other night, the 2 goals they got, one, Makar just didn't clear the puck. It bounces right to Ryan O'Reilly, and he, you know, makes a pretty nifty play to get a goal, but kind of fluky. and then they get a power play goal that they wouldn't have got if not for a bad line change. There was 1 second left in the power play.
But even the call itself wasn't even representative of how the game was being called up until that point.
Right. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. So, like, they were within millimeters of getting blanked the other night. You're not going to beat the Avs playing that way. But I think they're looking at it saying, man, if we go on the attack too much and we give up a couple odd man rushes or we take a couple of penalties and give them power plays, despite the fact that they were the Avs were over three in game one, I think they're fearful of the seven spot. But at some point, aren't they going to have to open it up a little bit, Will?
Yeah, they're going to have to take some chances, but that's going to happen, I think, when the Avalanche get up 2-3-4-0, right? They didn't have to take any chances in game one because they had a lead, and even though they gave it up, it was still just a one goal all the way until they tied it with 2-something left in the third period. So I just think that game two against Nashville was so similar to game one against
it's actually remarkable. You go through the dynamics. It's crazy.
Yeah, where a guy was just stopping everything, 50-some saves. And you're right. They were able to play that way where they just sat back. I keep equating it to a soccer team that takes a 1-0 lead in the first 10 minutes and then plays 80 minutes of keep away and just, playing on their heels and playing defense.
But let me use another analogy because it's going to turn into a boxer who knows he's losing on points is going to have to throw punches to try to knock someone out.
Right, and that's why I think in the first 10 minutes, if the Avs get a goal, get a lead, if they get a 2-goal lead at any point tonight, that's when it starts to be the snowball going downhill because the Blues will have to try to attack at that point and put themselves in some bad spots.
I mean, how is anyone going to beat this Avs team 4 times in 7 games? Like, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself and I'll hate that I just made that comment.
I already hate it now.
2 weeks from now.
I hate it right now.
Well, based on what we watched last night, they might score 10 every game against Calgary or Edmonton.
Right.
I mean, how about that? You talk about, they double the total?
Yeah.
Triple the total?
Nine
almost
to six.
But you really think that that's like some sort of jinx comment, Zach? Or is that a realistic viewpoint? Not only in Denver, but nationally, I think that sentiment is starting to creep in as well. Like, so beating them 4-7 is a task.
No, I totally understand, and I'm coming at your take because it's fair. I just think we've been through too much. We've had these same sort of sentiments, and even further, like literally even further this time last year when you're up 2-0, you already put this one in your pocket, and then you're up 2-0 in game three, and the question's being asked: is this team ever going to lose? I get the sentiment, and I want to agree with you. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves from an arrogant standpoint and just be measured because, again, we've just been through too much.
Well, if you look back, though, to last year, right, why did they lose 4 games in a row? Why did they lose 4 games in 7? It was 4-6 to Vegas. It's because Marc-Andre Fleury was really, really good. So if I look at who's left, there are two teams that make me nervous. Tampa Bay and New York. I don't think New York has the firepower to get that far. Tampa Bay, back-to-back defending champs, certainly they do, and they got game one already in their hand in Florida. But those two teams have elite goaltenders that could play great 4 out of 7 games, right? You're not going to see that. As good as Binnington was the other night, does anybody think he's going to play that way 4 more times, which means he'd have to play that well 5 times? New York and Tampa Bay, if you're looking at the other side and you're looking ahead, go ahead and root for Florida, root for Carolina, because then it becomes a more of an offense versus offense type of a series, and the Avs are going to win that all the time.
But even if we take a step back here, I think Vegas was significantly more scary last year than St. Louis is this year.
Sure.
I just think it's a better matchup. And if you said the history, right? Well, let's go back to San Jose. They were an 8 seed. They weren't even supposed to beat Calgary in the first round, and they got that to 7, and if it weren't for a sketchy, at best, offsides call against Gabe Landeskog, they win that game. Then 2 years ago, it's the bubble, right? The bubble against Dallas. Like, I know the way they lost was rip your heart out. It was game 7 overtime. But it was the bubble. I mean, there was no home ice. It was guys in a hotel room for 30 to 40 days. Like, that wasn't, I hate to say real because it still counted. But put it this way. If the Avs had won the 2020 Stanley Cup, would we have been overjoyed? I don't think so. I don't think a bubble title would have meant all that much to me.
I don't know. I think that's a bit of revisionist history.
No, I think you're right, because we talked about it. St. Louis won the last real cup. Tampa won one in the bubble, and then they won last year. That was close to normal, but it wasn't normal. St. Louis is kind of the defending champ. They played the last time everything was normal, it was the Blues playing Laura Brannigan 4 times in the Stanley Cup Finals.
I just don't think a bubble title would have... I mean, would you have been running out in the street and popping champagne?
I'd be at the parade with like a
Well, there wouldn't have been a parade. There was a pandemic.
We need to watch the parade on Zoom.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we cross over into a territory from a tone standpoint that is arrogance based on literally nothing of substance to draw from in the past. This is a team. When's the last time that the Avalanche made it out of the second round?
It was 2002. But
so we're talking about like five presidents ago, and here we are. I got a wager on the cup. I got a wager on the come out of the West. I'm not down on the Avs. I just want to be measured in the way that we're forecasting this thing.
But I'm just saying, I had a reason against San Jose for what happened. I had a reason for Dallas what happened.
But they still happened, Will.
They happened.
You're saying, I have a reason here. Well, they still, the facts is it happened.
Sure, but you said, okay, well, we need to be hyper aware of those things. You know who's hyper aware of those things? Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog, Mikhail Makar.
Sure.
There are a lot of teams that go through, especially in hockey and basketball, the seven-game grinds, that go through the sort of championship heartbreaking knockouts before they reach the mountaintop. It's very rare for guys to do it right from the jump when their first playoffs or whatever. So I think you're dismissive of what they may have learned.
I'm not at all. This is why I have them to win the cup. I am betting on that callus. I'm literally betting on it. But the Avs were one soft goal or one mistake away 48 hours ago from losing home ice advantage, and this entire conversation having a different tone.
Well, and they went out, shot them 13-0 in overtime. So I think they were aware of that, too. Whatever Bednar said in between the third period and overtime was great. They did not feel sorry for themselves after hitting five goal posts.
But here's the other reality of it. If they lose tonight, which none of us expect them to, we all think it's going to be a rout, right? We're all saying the over and take the puck line.
Yes.
So we all think it's going to go that way. But if they lose tonight, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I feel like we're all going to be really nervous.
Why wouldn't we? Is this going to turn into
four straight to go the other way?
Why wouldn't we?
Yeah, because of you're right.
I mean, I would turn around and bet the Avs in game three in St. Louis. Don't get me wrong. But
I would not.
But I'm saying from like a nervous standpoint, like, why wouldn't I? We're conditioned for this moment.
It would be here we go again.
Yes, it would. No, of course it would.
Stand by. I just had this conversation in the conference room at a going away party for one of our employees. My point being, I said the first time they lose in these playoffs, people are going to panic. And it's going to drive me nuts. You really think they're going to go 16-0, James? You're gonna be worried if they lose
tonight?
I got
a beard that thinks they're going to go 16-0. Yeah. No, I don't. But people are going to get nervous. They're going to get nervous because of what we saw last year.
One loss is going to send people into a tizzy. Yes.
I don't think a tizzy, but I think like alarms, your antennas are going to be going up. But this is not going to be easy. This is supposed to be really hard.
Here's the analogy I would have for it, Will. This is an example that is why people shouldn't panic, but they did. I guarantee you 90% of Broncos fans in Super Bowl 32, right after they've lost four Super Bowls, Elway's lost three times, and they got blown out by the Giants and blown out by the Redskins and blown out by the Niners, and it was worse every time. And the Packers go down on their opening drive of that game and score a touchdown. I guarantee you, because I know I was thinking it, 90% of Broncos fans were saying, here we go again. Now, it was different that year. It was a different team. But that is going to be the reaction around this town as soon as the Avs lose a game. Now, if it's 3-0 and they lose, it might be different. But if they lose tonight, yeah, it's going to be panic. And until they go out and win a game in St. Louis and take home ice back, we're going to all be thinking, is it same as last year? Are we on repeat?
And Will might answer them differently than the next guy. I think we would actually answer it the same way because I have just incredible confidence in this team. I just want to make sure I'm just not getting ahead of myself. But no, you're right. I mean, this is what it's been. But going back to like, There's going to be moments when people are freaking out. It's not supposed to be easy. The Avs are not the Monstars and playing the Looney Tunes. Like, they're going to lose some games. They're going to lose some games. But they're going to win more than they lose. I think we're all on the same page with that. We'll see how it shakes out tonight. How do you think tonight goes, Will?
Yeah, I think it's hockey tacos tonight. I really do. I think it's 7-2, 7-3, something like that. But real quick on that, Zach. They've faced adversity twice in these playoffs. Twice. In Nashville, game four, they get down 3-2. They scored three in a row. They win 5-3. No big deal. That was the first bit of adversity. They faced adversity on Tuesday night when St. Louis tied that game and you were there. I bet Ballerina was a little stuck silent.
There was some angst, yeah.
And you know what happened? They came out in overtime and just said, we don't care. We're going to outshoot you 13-0 and we guarantee we're going to put one in. The two times they faced adversity, they've rebounded. When they lose, that's bigger adversity.
I was going to say, there's layers to adversity.
Yeah.
Like, being down three, the Avs were down.
I can only go what I've seen in five games. Those are the two examples.
I know, but we're labeling adversity. The Avs were down in a series for 3 minutes and 47 seconds. Like, there is larger tests coming that it's like, yo, we have to look in the mirror and pull ourselves up by the bootstraps. And I don't think the first round series like represented that.
They were down 3-2 in a game that was so unimportant that in Music City they could only get the lead singer of Creed to do the anthem.
Mm.
That's how unimportant game four was in Nashville. And then they got bailed out to some extent by a borderline call that gave them a power play. That you're right, in overtime they came out and they played great and they 13 shots to zero. But that was started because they came out on a power play and wanted to end that thing in 40 seconds and be done. And once that started going, it just kept going even when the power play was over. So I don't know that I'd call those two moments adversity.
Well, point being, they lose tonight, which they're not going to. I'm hammering game three. I'm with Zach. I think it's a brand new team that has learned. I think that the focus is tighter than, you know, any Avs team we've seen maybe since the Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg days. I think they're that locked in right now.
While you're still here, I want to hit on the Nuggets real quick and the news that broke yesterday that Tim Connelly is in advanced conversations with the Minnesota Timberwolves for a lateral move. The paycheck wouldn't be lateral from what I'm hearing. It'd be top three, top four money in the sport. There's different views of this thing. There's we'll be okay. We were okay the last time. There's a thought like, hey, okay, let's maybe talk about this. Like, isn't the core locked up? And then there's, this is very bad news for the Nuggets. Where do you fall?
Oh, I think it's a massive, massive story, and it would be a major blow to lose Tim Connelly. Every single guy on that roster has a connection to Tim Connelly, including the three guys under max deals. And, oh, by the way, Nikola Jokic has said time and again he's going to sign the Supermax. I'm not here to sound the alarms. Oh, no, he might not sign the Supermax. But what goes through his head if the guy who was just in Sombor giving him a hug and handing him the trophy, one of the three from the Nuggets brass, is all of a sudden gone to Minnesota? I hope that he puts pen to paper to that thing tonight, because that thing's got to get done. And if Connelly leaves, does it start to create the little bit of doubt in his head? That's where it scares me the most. I think this is a massive story, and I think anyone who's dismissive of it does not realize the value Tim Connelly has to that franchise. I heard you say it. Outside of Jokic, he might be number two. Now, I may give you a little pushback on Jamal Murray, but there's not a lot of GMs. We're not sitting here saying Bill Schmidt's the third most important part of the Rockies. No. You know, even Joe Sakic, he's built a great team, but the Avs have players that are more critical than Joe Sakic sitting up in his suite. The Nuggets, it's a totally different story. This would be a shocker, and it'd be really bad.
You got your broom ready for tonight?
For the Avs?
Yeah, so we do our post-game show. Oh. It's Rachel, Will, and I on Facebook Live, YouTube, all over the place. And Will has had his broom with him for every show, because they're 5-0 since we've been doing it, not to, you know, try and take any credit. And so if they win tonight, you're bringing the broom, right? Pom-pom and broom.
Absolutely. Those are my two props. We did it for the Nuggets, and they were 1-4, so
okay. You know,
it has kind of evened out. I will say that it's a little more pleasant on these post-game shows than those
Nuggets. Yeah, I was a little more fired up post-game with the Nuggets.
No doubt.
I will tell you this, boys, I've scored a ticket, and I will be back in the building tonight. I'll be back in the building tonight.
That makes me feel better about it. Right? If they'd have lost tonight and you'd have been sitting on your couch, I would have been pointing the finger at you. So I feel better now that you got to keep the mojo going. Super Bowl 32, I sat in the same seat I did for the AFC title game and for the AFC divisional game. We had the same food, didn't matter what time of day it was. Change things up when it's working.
I've been wearing the same clothes.
So good for you.
Different seats, same clothes, same energy. Will, DenverFan.com. Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate it, guys. I texted Zach this morning. He's the good luck charm. So it's not a coincidence that I was in studio when this all got sorted out.
I love it. I love it. All right. Broncos training camp. Oh, by the way, let me tell you. Home playoff pregame show, Mission 16W. Tonight, Mike Evans, Scott Masters, they'll be hosting our Mission 16W pregame show live tonight from 6 p.m. until the puck drops, thanks to our friends at TNT Home Services. Broncos training camp was already going to have a lot of buzz to it, but after the news that broke yesterday, expect more cameras and more microphones. We'll tell you why coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Broncos training camp was already going to have buzz to it because of Russell Wilson. But after news that broke yesterday, expect even more cameras and microphones to be around Dove Valley. About the second week of August, kind of cool, the Broncos, who have been holding joint practices really for the last handful of years, this was not a thing 15 years ago. It's very much more of a thing now than ever before. Not that it didn't happen back in the day. Now it's just way more regular.
Well, it's more of a thing now that the preseason games are even more of a farce than they used to be. Right? The starters play very little, if at all. I mean, the Rams don't play their starters in any of the preseason games. So this is actually, for a lot of teams, the best work they get before opening.
Correct.
Week. So, yeah, these are a big deal.
The Broncos are going to hold at least one joint practice with the Dallas Cowboys, August 11th, 2 days ahead of their preseason opener at Mile High on that Saturday. But Dallas, wherever Dallas goes, eyeballs, cameras, microphones follow.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have expectations once again, and they're coming here. I'm fully expecting every national outlet, NFL Network, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, they will all be here in Denver.
Without a doubt. NFL Network always spends a day at every team's camp. That'll probably be the day they're in Denver. Because it's going to be a star-studded affair. You got Dak, you got Zeke, you got CeeDee Lamb, you got Jerry. I mean, that probably is the biggest star of all of them that'll be here. So it'll be great. And it'll be right at the end, I'm guessing, of when we can all go down and gather on the hill. Right, so like 2.5-3 weeks before that, you start being able to go down there. It'll be great attendance early. First look at Russell Wilson. Then you kind of have that lull of like, they haven't played a game. It's just another practice. And then right before the first preseason game, you get the Cowboys rolling in. I hope it's still open. We don't have a full schedule. I hope it's still open because that'll be a lot of fun to watch.
There's no doubt about it. And there is things that you can glean from these joint practices.
For sure.
I will never forget 2019. The San Francisco 49ers coming into Denver and just beating the Broncos like a freaking drum. Watching their guys up front, it was Eric Armstead and trying to remember some of those other guys in the middle of that defense that were just like pushing the Broncos around. Robert Saleh was the DC at the time.
Yep.
Screaming at the top of his lungs. Kyle Shanahan running around. Their energy was palpable, and they just thumped the Broncos.
If you'd have just watched...
And then appeared in the Super Bowl later that year.
If you just watched the first practice and said, okay, which team's going to go 5-11? You'd have said, Denver. Which team's going to go to the Super Bowl? San Francisco. And you would have been right on both counts.
Right.
And it was that glaring.
Like, it was.
And then when they got out on the practice field, the Broncos offense couldn't do anything.
Nope.
Nothing. And that should have been our sign of like, uh-oh, this may not be good. Was that year one of Flacco?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was the first sign that wasn't going to work out.
I mean, they literally couldn't. There was no completed passes.
Right.
And what made it worse is like you heard the voice of every single San Francisco 49er.
Yeah.
And the Broncos were church mice.
And they were chirping in every drill.
Yep.
Like there were some drills where it was like corners against receivers, and they were talking trash after every single play. And it was impossible not to notice. Impossible. One team had energy and the other one didn't. And that is the word we have heard over and over and over again this offseason. From the moment they started looking for a head coach to when they hired Nathaniel Hackett to when they made the trade for Russell Wilson. And then we're going to hear from Broncos again today. We will hear, I guarantee you we'll hear the word energy.
You'll hear
the
another
over-under
word.
Is 4.5. We'll hear it.
There's another word that doubles as energy. Starts with a J.
Juice. Okay, so we'll count that. Juice or energy.
That counts.
There will also be the obligatory, what's it like having Russell Wilson in the building? That question will happen today. But we will find out. Is there really energy? We'll find out when the Cowboys roll in. Because it's hard to tell when it's just Broncos practicing against Broncos. We had a pretty good sense last year when it was like, man, they're taking another water break. Like, they had no energy. When they're having to pump in crowd noise.
That was unbelievable.
But we'll know for sure on August 11th of are things different, or is this different this year or not? We'll know at that joint practice.
There's a couple of signature moments from the past. 2014, Peyton was here. There was a fight. There was a full-blown, like, brawl type of thing against the Houston Texans. that guys getting thrown out, separated, and fighting stances, and then it carried over to the game where I think Peyton got a, like, unsportsmanlike conduct because he was chirping at...
He was at Swearinger.
Yeah, Swearinger.
The safety.
Yes.
DJ Swearinger rolled out, ran all the way down in the end zone and was screaming at him, which was great. That was a wonderful moment. That was a carryover from the brouhaha during practice. I don't remember the fight at camp, but I do remember the Manning play, and now that we're talking about it, that went back to what happened in practice. So, yeah, that was memorable. That was good. That set a tone.
In 2017, we had the infamous, or not infamous, well, kind of. It was when Paxton didn't have an incompletion.
Yeah, his best moment as a Bronco.
Yeah, went 12 for 12. I remember, like, Cecil was reporting from camp. He's like, guys, like, the ball didn't hit the ground.
Yeah, he was flawless.
So
that, and I still went with Trevor. That was another competition that was a farce.
Okay. I mean, James, still?
Would they have been worse off if they'd have gone that way? Don't you have to play your first-round quarterback more than four starts? You have to.
You do.
You're playing Trevor Siemian instead, you're looking at the short-term versus the long-term.
No. What I'm saying is, like, you're saying that the competition was a farce?
It was.
They shouldn't have had a competition. They shouldn't have had a competition.
They should have just named the first round draft pick the quarterback.
Paxton should have just started and been unable to fail on his own. But when you have a competition, Trevor won the competition.
Of course he's going to, because he's going to look good in practice when it's controlled.
Well, he would look good in any, he would look better than Paxton in any scenario.
No, not necessarily. But if it's a,
what scenario, was Paxton Lynch going to look better than Trevor Siemian?
Well, I mean, in the games he actually played, there were some moments.
Well, which ones?
I guarantee you,
your favorite Paxton Lynch moment?
If when he came off the bench to make to in relief of Trevor down in Tampa, threw some dimes, threw some darts. He looked great in that game. I think we were all excited after that. Here's a competition.
What is wrong with
a competition where Paxton Lynch would look better than Trevor Siemian. Do you remember
Call of Duty?
Do you remember the game in San Diego? I think it was the end of the first half. Might have been the end of the game. I think it was the end of the first half. Broncos were like at the 42-yard line. And Trevor Siemian couldn't get the ball into the end zone on a Hail Mary. Paxton Lynch would have got the ball in the end zone.
There you go.
I found one for you.
There you go. And then real quick, the Bears in 2018, I remember they came in here, and it was Vic Fangio's defense.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. That was VJ's final year. And I remember if you had a tight end number and you were listed as a tight end, you had a great day of practice.
Okay, that was a sign of things to come.
Yes, I was like, wait, who is that? Who are all these tight ends? Either they're going to the Hall of Fame or we just can't cover them in that age a particular way.
It was B.
So, so we'll see. Dallas Cowboys, it'll be front and center in the NFL community that week. Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson. You didn't mention Micah Parsons, I don't believe, earlier.
Yeah, there's a start. Last year they were up in Minnesota.
Yes.
Right? And
that was when Mike Boone got hurt.
He got hurt up there, and somehow when no one was watching, that's when Teddy took the lead. That's weird. Weird how that turned out.
I remember really quick, I remember the stadium practice. It's a preseason game. It's a preseason game. When Drew lit it up.
Yeah.
In like the second quarter, like Teddy had the first quarter, and then Drew had the second quarter. Drew like went like 6 for 7, threw a touchdown bomb, and Vic's coming off the field. They're like, Vic, what'd you think about Drew Locke? Teddy was good too.
Yeah.
That was literally the first. No, Teddy was good too.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah, he found Jerry Jeudy on that third down. He had the deep ball to KJ Hamler. But hey, Teddy looked good in the practices, so we're going to go with him.
All right. We are going to go live to Dove Valley. The Broncos are back practicing, and we'll eavesdrop on some of the Broncos speaking next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
All right, so we are expecting to eavesdrop on a little press conference at Dove Valley. Word on the street is that we're going to hear from Albert Okwuegbunam. And maybe Quinn Miners, the belly man. And then there's a third as well that might step up to the podium, and that would be Malik Reed. Who are you the most bullish on of Albert O, Quinn Miners, Malik Reed?
Wow. I have to pick one?
You don't have to.
I don't think Albert O is going to be the starting tight end by the end of the season. He probably will be to start the year. You've done a great job the last 3 years pointing out how, hey, that's a tough position to come in as a rookie.
Yeah.
And perform, you know, at a high level. And we were kind of, you know, managing the expectations for Noah Fant through that. We should do the same thing with Greg Dulcich. He's a third-round pick versus a first-round pick.
Yeah.
So let's keep it in check. But will I be disappointed if by the end of the year, based on, you know, kind of what we've seen, very small sample size? But, yeah, I will be if it's not Greg Dulcich by the end of the year. I think Quinn Meinerz is a guy who I don't think he's ever going to be a starter here. I don't. I don't think he's a fit for the what Nathaniel Hackett wants to do and kind of the running game out of this system. I just don't. And what you need linemen to do. I don't think he's a good fit. And Malik Reed,
he was a top 100 pick, by the way.
I know.
I mean,
these
guys are supposed to be starters.
I'm with you, but they brought Graham Glasgow back for a reason. Like it was time to get out of that deal. You have Dalton Risner on the other side. You have Cushenberry in the middle. If it was going to be Miners, you just play Miners, and you had Moody as your kind of swing guy that could bounce back and forth. So they brought Graham Glasgow back for a reason in my mind.
Yeah.
You know what? I'd say Malik Reed. I think Malik Reed is in the perfect spot of he's a really good rotational pass rusher. Because he's going to get six sacks whether he plays sparingly coming into a spot, you know, to relieve guys, or if he starts every game. We've seen that during his time. I think that's the perfect role for him. And with Randy Gregory and Bradley Chubb, he should be in that spot. And even if one of those guys, you know, is hurt and can't go, which we should count on because that's the history, I think Nick Benito can fill in there. Malik Reed's a rotational guy. I think he'll be perfectly suited for that. So I'm going to go with Malik Reed to answer your question.
We may have a draft class here where no one starts.
Essentially had that last year, in at least week one, and then Pat Surtain turned into a starter. But they had one guy
who was
a starter.
Pat Surtain didn't start week one?
Mm-mm.
Really?
Mm-mm.
He was a third corner?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was Darby and Fuller?
It was Fuller. And Fuller was the guy that, boy, when we went down there, it was one of the open practices after camp was closed to the public, and Fuller was standing on the sidelines, and Pat Surtain was out there with the ones, and that was the first sign of like, all right, this is happening sooner rather than later. It happened by week two. But if memory serves, Fuller was the opening day starter.
Because PS2 was already playing well in the preseason. He looked the part of practice. Remember, he had the pick six
in Minnesota.
What
a memorable preseason game that was.
It really was. I know you're joking around.
A lot happened.
A lot did happen. You may have a draft class where you don't have one starter, and that could be a good thing.
When you don't
have your first round pick.
Yeah, your first pick in the draft was 64.
Right.
So I would be surprised.
But still, you got two top 100 picks.
They're going to have a starter if you're going to count your starter as a return man. Montrell Washington's going to get that job.
Sure.
But that tells you a little bit about the class, too, right? Like, okay, we're having to kind of stretch the rules here to come up with a starter. But he's going to take Deontay Spencer's job, the job that was Deontay Spencer. So right. he's going to be the kick returner. He's going to be the punt returner. Now, we'll see if he keeps it, right? Because it was the same thing with Isaiah McKenzie. He came in here, and that was why they drafted him, and that was his job. And then they tried to keep him in that role after fumble after fumble after fumble after fumble. And at some point, it was like VJ had to get him out of there. I'm not predicting that, but Montrell Washington's going to be that guy.
Well, that threshold came and went, and VJ still put him out there.
Yeah,
against the Patriots, and they kicked it right to him. He muffed for a fifth time that season, and that was when Vance said that they had to do what was best for Isaiah. Like, it wasn't best for Isaiah to sit him down. Well, who gives a rip about what's best for Isaiah, your fifth-round pick out of Georgia? Like, let's get a guy who can catch the ball. But I remember Bill Belichick saying after the game, that's what he does. When they asked him about him muffing the punt.
He wasn't wrong.
Because that was the game. It was like the first time since 1974, because I remember the graphic at the bottom of the screen, that they brought a kick to the house, a punt to the house, and also blocked a punt in the same game. And they asked him about the iMac in addition to muffing a punt. And he said, yeah, that's what he does.
And that wasn't the only time in the last 4 or 5 years where the Broncos have had that kind of a stat on special teams in a game. Right? We talked about it a couple days ago with Dwayne Stukes and how that needs to be the most improved group.
Yes.
And despite the fact that their offense should be vastly improved, I mean,
and still be runner-up to special teams.
Yeah, special teams is so low They almost can't do anything but improve. And I think Dwayne Stukes impressed me every time I hear him
Same.
I think he's going to get that group, he's going to get that ship heading in the right direction. And
although I wonder about the relationship between him and Brandon McManus.
I don't care.
No, I'm not saying it's keeping me up at night. I'm just curious.
Well, but it's a silly question. Like, how much are you... how much are you tapping into the kicker to, kind of get some insight here? Like,
yeah, no, but no, I know the question was a little bit silly, but his answer wasn't silly at all. He's like, why would I be talking to Brandon McManus? I played with real football players. Next. It's like, wait,
100%
what?
True.
What?
It's 100% true.
Just not used to that honesty.
One of my quirky rule changes. I don't think you should be allowed to have a kicker or a punter. You should have to play a position.
That guy kick it or punt.
How interesting would it be if Cortland Sutton had to make the game-tying extra point in the final second?
Oh, my God. Why do you want to see that?
I think it'd be fascinating because then you'd say, let's just go for two. I think it adds a whole new dynamic. Plus, I would rather go into the locker room and Cortland miss the extra point and he's been toiling out on the field the entire game than a guy who's been standing there drinking Gatorade and doesn't have a grass stain on his pants pulled it to the left. As a player, that would be harder for me to stomach.
Okay.
I got a lot of them.
James is filling in for Stoke today. Stoke will be back tomorrow. Stokely is attending his son's graduation from high school. We are still waiting to hear from some Broncos. We started talking about the tight end position because Albert Okwuegbunam is expected to get up and speak at the podium. And we have a fun segment here, and I don't know if we'll do it tomorrow or the next day, but just how impactful has the tight ends been in Russell Wilson's career. And I think it'll tell an interesting story that we can dive into. We got some good research behind it. So here in just a couple minutes, Albert O, Quinn Meinerz, and Malik Reed. Which one of those Broncos are you the most confident will be on the football team 2 years from now?
Wow. I don't know that I'd say I'm confident in any of them being there. I guess I'd say Albert O.
I think so, too.
You know, I mean, because he's going to be he and Dulcich, they're going to be the combo moving forward. I don't think he's in jeopardy of losing his job. When you have Randy Gregory, Bradley Chubb, Nick Benito, Jonathan Cooper, could you see Malik Reed getting squeezed out? Yeah. Yeah, because this is going to sound disparaging, but he's kind of a guy, right? Like, there's nothing that you look at that and say, he's going to turn into an elite pass rusher. He's actually kind of had the opportunity to show that he has one.
He's had that Shaq Barrett.
Right. And
okay,
at some
it's your
point,
show now.
If you're fifth in the pecking order,
yeah,
they're going to start going with younger players because year after year after year, they're going to draft somebody at that position.
Right.
So he's going to get replaced in a year or two by the next Jonathan Cooper. Assuming Benito isn't a bust and Jonathan Cooper, you know, continues to develop, you're going to go with the younger option. You're going to go with, who's somebody who could be Malik Reed this year, and then the next year turns into a guy. And so at that point, when you've seen 4 or 5 years that Malik Reed is what he is, you move on and go a different direction.
All things considered, he's done well for himself. Undrafted player who switched positions in his last year at Nevada and is still kind of kicking around. So, but I agree with you. You know that the forecast of him probably isn't any departure from what we've already seen. We will eavesdrop here in just a couple minutes. Still waiting for these guys to walk up to the podium. But in the meantime, did a move that John Elway didn't make not get enough credit? Hang tight. We'll fill you in next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.